Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lendman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest today is Russ Baker. Russ wrote a blockbuster book out in 2009. It's titled Family of Secrets. There is so much in it. Well, the subtitle, The Bush Dynasty, The Powerful Forces That Put It in the White House, and What Their Influence Means for America. There's so much in it that I scheduled a two-part program, and even then, I don't think we can get through it all, but it is loaded with information some people are familiar with, but I guarantee you, you will be surprised by the things that Russ spent years researching and came up with just some amazing information. He describes himself as an old-fashioned muckraking journalist, bringing the best of mainstream methods to the alternative media and the best of the alternative media to the mainstream. In 2005, he founded Who, What, Why, the Real News Project, producing groundbreaking, transformative, independent, investigated journalism, his words. And then this book, it really and truly is a sweeping, revealing, detailed account of money and power. So here we go on day one. Russ, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's great to be here.
I'm delighted to have you come on. Let me just mention to you, by the way, we have a few breaks. When you hear soft music coming on, it's coming, and I'll interrupt. I've only been writing for about 4 years, and about 2.5 years ago, I took a crack at the Bush dynasty. I called my article The End of the Bush Dynasty. I was referring to all the damage that that W has done. And I went back to the beginning. You had so much to write about that if you went back to the origins of this dynasty, you absolutely probably would have produced another book as big as the one that you did, which with all the notes and the index and everything, it runs close to 600 pages. It really is an amazing piece of work.
I actually did go all the way back. I think I went back about 9 generations. There were so many things I did not include because I decided that I had to stay focused. But there were fascinating things about Bush's forebears. And, for example, one of the things was that if you went back far enough, you found one of his forebears who was an abolitionist. And then you see that that man's son was also something of a reformer, albeit a little bit less, and each generation became more connected to the power structure, and I thought that was fascinating, but that's not in Family of Secrets, just because I didn't have the space.
You didn't have the space, obviously. Well, I didn't go back to the abolitionist days. I went back 4 generations, beginning with, I guess the power family. Probably Samuel Prescott Bush was the key guy, but also George Herbert Walker. Call them dual founders. I call them dual founders of a criminal enterprise. And Walker was a St. Louis financier. Prescott Bush, Samuel Prescott Bush, a major Ohio industrialist. He was in the Herbert Hoover. He was a close advisor to Herbert Hoover. And then you get W's grandfather, Prescott Bush, Sam's son. He was a U.S. senator and investment banker. Go back 100 years, and the Bush family was connected to the Rockefellers and Standard Oil, to Wall Street firms. A key theme in your book, Russ, U.S. intelligence since World War I. Oh, so much to cover. I'll pick off a couple more points when we come back from break, and then I want to jump into the book and all that you wrote. Let's take the first break, and we'll come right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Russ Baker on his book, The Bush Dynasty. Just a couple more points, Russ, and I want you to jump
family
in.
Family of Secrets, by the way. That.
Oh, I'm reading one line down, and forgive me for that. Family of Secrets, a subtitle, The Bush Dynasty, The Powerful Forces That Put It in the White House and What Their Influence Means for America. Oh, yes, I've got it. my eyes are faster. My right eye is faster than my two eyes. I just did a little tabulation of what the family produced, at least going back to Samuel Prescott Bush and Walker. It produced a U.S. senator, two governors, a congressman, a little overlap in this, a congressman, a vice president, a CIA director, and two presidents. Not bad for one family. What is bad is what they did in those jobs. And then Prescott Bush, W's grandfather, he was connected to the Nazis at least twice over, from the Wall Street firm Brown Brothers Harriman, the New York Union Banking Corporation. Oh, it's an ugly bunch of stuff, Russ. But you jump in full force, and you really get very detailed on George Herbert Walker and all of the things he was involved in, and so on going forward. So you jump in and take over. And what's a good spot to begin this?
Well, I think the key issue is certainly some people have said to me, and as well as prospective publishers when I was working on the book, they said, why should we want to hear another word about George W. Bush? He's at the time he was on his way out, and then he was gone, and good riddance, many people said, why should we want to hear any of this? And a lot of people, I think, misunderstand the purpose of Family of Secrets until they read it. They think that it's just another sort of conventional history of a president, and that couldn't be further from the truth. What I did was I set out to understand how somebody as controversial, as unqualified, surprising an individual as George W. Bush could rise to the top of the United States and really to become the most powerful person in the world. And I think these exercises are crucially important without making any kind of comparisons. I think that anyone who has affected world history in any kind of profound way, whether it was a Pinochet or a Mussolini. I mean, I think people always want to know, what can we learn from this? And was this an isolated occurrence, sort of irrelevant as we move on? And I think the real theme of Family of Secrets is that we actually do not understand practically anything about what George W. Bush's rise to power actually represented. We don't understand what it was about, who was behind it, and we also don't understand that the triumph of the Bush clan is not an isolated success of one family, but rather that it represents the sort of ultimate triumph of a complex of special interests that seek to influence power continuously, and that do it right now with Barack Obama in the White House. That really, I think, is the theme of Family of Secrets.
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely is a study. Call it a case study in power. And a very crucial element of power is the intelligence component. And that just runs right through the Bush family, going back to the early part of the last century, Russ. And of course, George Herbert Walker, CIA director, an intelligence asset. These companies they were involved in very likely were front companies, both the father and son, Herbert Walker and George W. And nobody has any idea about any of this stuff.
Well, that's right. This has never come out, and this just amazes me because, you see, I mean, I myself didn't know these things, and I got interested in doing this book back in, 2003. I'd been asked to go to the former Yugoslavia, a kind of a sort of Peace Corps type of thing, to train journalists there in how to do investigative reporting and to strengthen their democracy. And while I was there, we had the invasion of Iraq, and I could see right away that this was really a desperate ploy that the public was being sold a bill of goods. And people there could see it. People all over Europe as I traveled around could see it. And they said, what is happening to your country? And I realized I better get back to the U.S. and do what I usually do, which is sort of dig into the sources of power at home. So I got back, and I began in early 2004 traveling around the country. I could see George W. Bush was headed for a possible or even likely re-election against John Kerry, and I thought, boy, you know, there's just no, there isn't a kind of a deep analysis of what's going on. And I didn't want to pose answers because I didn't know what they were. But, Steve, I traveled around the country, and I just asked everybody who I thought had an interesting perspective, what is behind what's going on? And I didn't get any good answers. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to study the Bush clan from every perspective. And so for the first 2 years of my 5 years of research for Family of Secrets, I just sort of took the family apart. I tried to figure out what were the relationships, what were the dynamics. And one of the biggest revelations to me was to realize that the notion that George W. Bush was kind of a rebel from his family and that he was somehow estranged from his father was false, and that, in fact, this was deliberate propaganda that had been created to sort of mislead the American public, to make the son more politically sellable than the father had been. We remember the father lost for re-election in 92. And then I thought, well, what is this about? If they're really not estranged and they're actually working closely together as they appear to have done for almost all of their adult lives, I thought, what is this about? And what it really was about was that the family does not want people to look at who they work for. And so when I began looking at the father, because, of course, George W. Bush would never have been president if another George Bush had not already been president. And so it really was the father I had to turn to. And as you know from having read Family of Secrets, the first half almost is really about the father, George H.W. Bush. And I begin to look at him, and what I start discovering is that this man is not who we thought he was. He is not this sort of mild-mannered, preppy, hanging out in Maine, driving the golf carts, amiable, whatever. He is this fellow with a secret life, a fellow who, behind this facade of being an oil man and a congressman and so on, appears to have been working for the intelligence services of the United States, not just in 1976 in the 1 year where he was an unqualified, supposedly, CIA director, but that he appears to have been working in intelligence operations, including essentially illegal intelligence operations, for his entire adult life. And as you know, I go through a number of fascinating historical epochs from the Kennedy assassination through Watergate, where we see, when we really look carefully at documents that we interview enough people, we connect the dots, we see the fingerprints of the elder Bush and all of these remarkable transformative events.
Oh, it's amazing, Russ, and we can get to it when we spend a little time talking about Watergate, which is such a big story. But one little snippet was that George Herbert Walker just happened to be in Dallas that very day that Kennedy was assassinated, but he wasn't the only noted figure. There were other noted figures in Dallas at the same time. But one fact before that, George Herbert Walker's father, Prescott, when he was at Brown Brothers Harriman, his partner was Robert Lovett, and Robert Lovett was very instrumental in creating the CIA. We had the OSS during the war, and then 1947 we got the CIA. So I guess it really amounted more or less to simply putting a new label on an old agency. But it was a new act. It was legislation. Harry Truman signed it, creating the CIA. I can't believe he didn't know what he was doing. He later complained that he made a big mistake, but that's another story. They were all involved. So you got the Bush family. Truman didn't have a dynasty, Russ. Maybe he was plucked out of obscurity. But there's always a motive to why these people are chosen. And very rarely does anything of importance ever happen randomly. Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was very carefully chosen. And Bill Clinton was very carefully chosen. There was no rise to prominence from a figure who came out of obscurity. Obscure only to us, Russ.
Well, that's right. And in fact, one of the, I think, central points of Family of Secrets is that we have a certain naivete about how power functions in our country. Even the more sophisticated among us well-read, knowledgeable about history and world affairs, we look at other countries, and at least when it comes to the so-called banana republics and the developing countries and so on, we see how oligarchies and powerful families and what have you sort of shape the course of their country's histories, not perfectly or continuously, but as best as they can, and really with a great deal of influence. And then when we look at our country, we imagine this this contest that we are presented with by the media, where it's really like we remember it from high school, you know, with whoever wanted to decided to run for student body president, and they all gave speeches and made buttons, and it was all very exciting, and we chose, and somebody won. And, you know, that's just so far from how presidents are selected, as you point out, and in Family of Secrets. I do go, I think to some extent, as much as I can without getting off of the main thread, to, as you point out, people like Jimmy Carter, who the Rockefeller family had its eye on him. It was very clear in the mid-70s with after Watergate and all of the Senate hearings into abuses by the CIA and the FBI and what have you, that there was going to be a cry for some reforms. And so they looked at the Democrats and they chose somebody who they thought was going to be the most malleable.
Oh, absolutely. We have to take another break, Russ. And it seems as though history repeated in the last election. Obama was the 2008 Jimmy Carter. So far, that's another story.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Russ Baker on his book, Family of Secrets, long subtitle. Russ, by the way, in the article I wrote, it was in December 2006. I may have called it the end of the Bush dynasty, but I did not mean it to imply that the power of the family was gone, because I guess oftentimes the real power lurks beneath the surface that nobody sees, nobody notices. What I meant by the article was that George Bush left office. Even then, you could see he would leave office a very widely despised guy. So I think he ruined it for Jeb to become president. But it does not mean that Jeb would not yield a lot of power below the surface, or that the old man, George Herbert Walker, he is now about 85 years old. I imagine he still is a force to be reckoned with, but he's not a young guy, so soon enough, well, he doesn't have that many more years around, but you never know. He might, the bad ones seem to last forever. He could live to be 100, and if he's still lucid, he'll still be a force.
2 points there. First of all, I would not write off the Bush family itself as continuing players on the political scene. I do think that Jeb Bush can be a factor. I do think he can credibly actually run for president. I think that the media has always treated him as different than his brother, and so he will automatically start out in a better position, and certainly a better position than most of his potential opponents, just because he's so well known. There's his son, another George Bush, who is apparently looking to get into politics. He has moved from Florida to Texas and in a major law firm there and very active in trying to become a Republican power broker. So we may yet see a third George Bush. But the larger issue is that it doesn't really matter, because the Bushes don't do anything in isolation. They never made their own decisions. The way that history gets reported, the sort of great man theory of history, that the president hears the views of a bunch of people and ultimately sits alone and ponders and decides what to do, it's pretty far from the truth. They're always struggling to satisfy key constituencies. And I think that in the case of George W. Bush, who had very little vision of any kind, and his father, George H.W. Bush, who himself famously admitted that he had a problem with the, quote, vision thing, they didn't really have a kind of a deep-seated philosophy that was articulated to the public, and so they were very much operating from the agendas of these what you might call these sort of ruling elites. And in Family of Secrets, that theme, I think, is shown again and again and again in different ways, that these elites were talking. I think probably the most important of all is the resource extraction elites. And, you know, last night I was sitting with some people and we were talking about the nature of power, and I pointed to the ceiling and I said, it's right there in the light. When those lights go out and the power goes out, the heat, the air conditioning, the fuel runs out, we're finished. And all of these other things that are important or that we talk about more, like technology, which is very important, obviously, and then the manifestations like your Twitters and your Facebooks and so on, all of these companies that do those things cannot hold a candle to the companies that control the world's natural resources. And that will be the case until the lights really do go out. The Bushes understand this. The Bushes have always represented those interests, and those interests are right in there today. You can be sure they had a lot to say about who was appointed in the Obama administration in key positions like Treasury, Federal Reserve, at the Pentagon, at the CIA. The social issues are something else. And those people don't care about that. They don't care about Supreme Court nominees and what their position is on abortion. None of those things matter to them. Those things only matter in terms of exciting the base, you know, getting fundamentalist Christians out to vote and things like that. But those powers don't care about those things. They care about the kind of decisions that we don't spend much time as a people talking about.
Oh, absolutely, Russ. I mean, energy is crucially important. There's no question that money is crucially important, up to now at least, and I would think pretty sure at least for a fair while going forward, keeping the dollar as the world's reserve currency is important. This talk beginning about a global currency, maybe that's in the future. I don't know, and certainly I can't predict. I'm not an insider. I can never predict it. But throughout the last century, keeping the dollar as the world's reserve currency was central, and the other big element is U.S. militarism, to have the hot fist of the Pentagon behind backing up everything. So if things don't go as planned, the Pentagon can always step in as the ultimate enforcer, whether it's only to intimidate or whether it's to wage aggressive wars. And we've waged a lot of them since World War II, plus all of the proxy wars that we support. And we'll have a future program, Russ, on U.S. bases around the world, a big issue, but keeping its military footprint is a crucially important element. Let's shift to another topic. Well, on the energy theme, the topic of front companies, and very possibly there was one that George Bush was involved in, but go back to the father and his
sure.
Zapata Petroleum and Zapata Offshore. We may have a break coming up. I hear the music. Let's just take that break and then talk about these companies. It very likely were front companies. And I don't think it's any coincidence, Russ, that the Bush family was involved with oil. We'll come right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Russ Baker on his book, Family of Secrets. Russ, I think it's a good idea to concentrate on the old man today, save George W. Bush for tomorrow. There's so much about Herbert Walker to talk about, and if we don't finish, we'll continue. We've got to talk about Watergate. We've got to talk about the Kennedy assassination. Oh, I have piqued the interest of listeners. They sure want to know about it. But let's talk about Zapata Petroleum and Zapata Offshore first.
Right. Well, what happened was well, basically, without getting into the Kennedy matter right now, when I became interested in George Herbert Walker Bush's rapid rise himself to the highest levels of government, I began just kind of looking at his resume and what he had been doing, and One of the things I did was I looked at his early companies way back in the 1950s. He created a company called Zapata Petroleum, and then quickly another company called Zapata Offshore, which had just a couple of rigs, basically a handful of offshore rigs that they would lease out to oil companies. And yet I, as I began studying documents, I saw that he was remarkably busy in traveling all over the world, and he was going everywhere to hot spots. I mean, this man looked more like some kind of a super diplomat or something than he did a fellow with a very small, modest company with a few rigs. It just didn't seem to make any sense, and I said, this looks like a cover for something else. And then I obtained some documents showing that when he created his early oil business, he did so with a young man who had, quote-unquote, resigned from the Central Intelligence Agency to go into business with Mr. Bush. And I thought, well, you know, you can't just resign like that after you've just received a training that costs the government a tremendous amount of money, nor would you be inclined to do that. In fact, you even wonder how it is that a CIA officer would even know young Bush, his struggling oil entrepreneur in West Texas. And so I thought, well, there's something strange about this. And then I looked carefully at Zapata and how they, the rigs were stationed in places like Quezal Bank just off of Cuba prior to the Bay of Pigs invasion, other key and very, very interesting decisions that the company made, which I do, I think, document in some detail in Family of Secrets. And then we go forward from that company, and we see in the early 60s when the Bay of Pigs invasion turns out to be a disaster, John F. Kennedy feels he's been misled by Alan Dulles, the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. And again, Alan Dulles turns out to be a very close friend of the Bush family, going way back, working with them in various business ventures, representing some of the largest American firms operating abroad, with deep concerns about leaders in places like Guatemala and so forth, who they are not happy with their policies. And so Kennedy ousts Alan Dulles, and I quote another letter in Family of Secrets from Prescott Bush, who's very angry. He never forgave Kennedy for ousting Alan Dulles. And so Alan Dulles leaves the CIA in late 1961, and then 2 years later, John F. Kennedy is assassinated in Dallas. And what really struck me there, what I was most interested, was a statement that George H.W. Bush had made when asked, presumably an innocuous question. He asked, do you remember where you were on November 22, 1963? And, you know, he sure didn't. He just did not quite remember. And I thought, well, that's strange. I think everybody over the age of five or so at the time remembers where they were, and particularly a man like Bush, who was already about 40 years old, was in fact a Texan, was in Texas, the state where Kennedy was at the moment. And in fact, George H.W. Bush was himself a candidate for the United States Senate at the time that his future opponent, the Democratic senator from Texas, was going to be the motorcade with Kennedy. So, of course, it's absurd for him to claim that he doesn't remember where he is.
Russ, by the way, I not only remember where I was, I remember the exact spot I was standing on when I heard the news, and I just froze in place like a statue when I heard it. Yeah, obviously he knew where he was.
Well, that's right. But I thought, well, why would you say that? And then I thought back to what else I remembered about him. And he frequently has amnesia. When he was vice president under Reagan, he claimed to have had nothing to do with all these covert operations in Iran-Contra. This despite the fact that he was an extremely active vice president who was very involved with so-called national security matters and a former CIA director. And so his claim to not remember that was, they were all basically just ridiculous, almost laughable. And so I thought, well, if he's trying to falsely claim he doesn't remember where he is, why would he do that? And this brings us to several other documents that I cite in Family of Secrets. One shows that on the day after Kennedy's assassination, it's an FBI memo, And J. Edgar Hoover is reporting that the FBI was tasked with finding out whether Cuban exiles in the United States were there was some risk possibly that these groups who didn't like Kennedy would see his assassination as an invitation to launch some kind of hostilities against Castro's Cuba. And so, you know, a lot of these documents have elements of truth that cover up other things that are more substantial truths. But anyway, this memo it mentions a couple of intelligence officer liaisons that are participating in these briefings, and one of them is George Bush of the CIA. Now, this is 1963. George Bush has never admitted that he was in the CIA before he was appointed as a civilian director in 1976. So here it is 13 years before. The FBI memo says George Bush was in the CIA, was doing something with Cuban exiles that had something to do with interest in the Kennedy assassination. And, of course, so that's astonishing. And then there's a second document. And this other document is actually from the day of the assassination. And it's the same man, the future president, 41st president of the United States. And here he is now, an oil man. And he's calling right at 1:45 p.m. as the world is learning that John F. Kennedy has died. He's calling the FBI, but this time he's calling as a private citizen. He's calling the FBI's Houston office, not the Dallas office. And he says, you know, I may have some information on who shot President Kennedy. So I go into that in Family Secrets, and I look at what he's claiming. And he's claiming that a man in Houston who he barely knows anything about supposedly had been making some general statements about Kennedy, and that he thought this man might be a suspect. Well, I go into who the man is, and it turns out he knew the man. The man was a volunteer in his Harris County GOP headquarters. And moreover, and even stranger, first of all, the man was no threat at all. But moreover, at the very moment that H.W. Bush is calling the FBI with this supposed tip, trying to be helpful, his own assistant is over at the home of this alleged suspect on a very innocuous campaign business thing, basically providing him with an alibi. Bush's own assistant even drives the man to the Secret Service offices to basically help clear him. And so we see in these things what is called tradecraft. These are classic, very deep intelligence procedures designed to confuse, designed to move the eye away from what's actually going on, designed to create alibis. And there's much, much more in Family of Secrets, four chapters just on the Kennedy assassination and the Bushes.
Well, Herbert Walker, of course, was in Dallas that day. Ironically, or call it what you will, Richard Nixon was also in Dallas that day. And one other figure, Lyndon Johnson, surprise, surprise, was in Dallas that very day. I don't think that was a coincidence, but I'm not claiming that they pulled the trigger or did anything of the sort. Who knows? But why on earth were they in Dallas on that day? And then just for Herbert Walker to say he couldn't remember, oh, that is very, very suspicious.
Well, Family of Secrets, Steve, is the first book or anything, any article, whatever, that actually establishes exactly where George H.W. Bush was that day. And I don't want to reveal everything from the book because I tried to write it a bit like a thriller and front.
Oh, impossible in 2 hours. Right? We'd need about 2 weeks to do that.
Okay. Well, I want your listeners to be able to enjoy some of these things. But in any case, there's a whole backstory there, and I have to say that I'm, you know, considered, I think, a relatively mainstream journalist, albeit not a typical one. But I mean, I have a master's in journalism, and I adhere to all of the standards of fairness and balance, and how you check everything out, and having multiple sources, and I don't rush to any kind of conclusion about anything. I myself really was not that knowledgeable about the Kennedy assassination. I'd never really given it too many thoughts because it just seems so complex. There were so many books already out, so many opinions. But when I began trying to understand the trajectory of the Bush family to the top, I felt I had to understand why they did things they did. I felt I had to understand why George H.W. Bush would falsely claim not to remember where he was on November 22. And this led me to decide I had to know more about the Kennedy assassination. And that's why there's so much in there. What I learned was that, in fact, George H.W. Bush had a third connection to this whole scenario. There was a man in Lee Harvey Oswald's life. This is mentioned a bit briefly in a few books, but very few people know about this.
You're talking about George DeMorenschild?
That's right. A man named George DeMorenschild, a white Russian emigre anti-communist with his own very clear intelligence connections. Basically sort of adopted Lee Harvey Oswald in the year prior to the assassination. This man and his wife, Jeanne, were basically like parent figures to Lee and Marina Oswald, driving them to medical appointments and introducing them to social circles, helping them with housing and jobs. And if people think Lee Harvey Oswald was the killer of John F. Kennedy, why would they not be more interested in this couple? And when you look at this couple, what you find is that George DeMorenschild knew George H.W. Bush, that they were friends, and that they knew each other going all the way back to the late 1930s. When George DeMorenschild's brother was the stepfather, it sounds a little confusing, but was the stepfather to H.W. Bush's roommate at prep school at Andover. And I can tell you that when you're a teenage boy and you have a roommate and you're close, they were extremely close, and they went to each other's homes all the time. The Bushes knew the DeMorenschilds quite well. And so flash forward, and here's George DeMorenschild, and he's the sort of a key figure in shaping Lee Harvey Oswald's trajectory in the year leading up to the assassination. And certainly, I think any fair observer would say, I want to know more about that. So in Family of Secrets, I have an entire chapter just on George DeMorenschild. And we see this fascinating story where he is involved in all kinds of different ways. And then you flash forward to 1976, where the elder Bush is the head of the CIA, and George DeMorenschild writes him a letter, and he tells him he's afraid. And apparently he says, I guess I've been indiscreet in talking about Lee Harvey Oswald, but I'm an old man, and could you please remove the web around me? Director Bush writes back and says, dear George, I don't know of any problems. I'm sure, you know, he basically alludes to the idea that DeMorenschild is imagining something. But 6 months later, George DeMorenschild has his brains blown out with a shotgun.
Very, very incredible story, Russ. And again, who listening to this program ever heard of this man? I doubt very many. But an important story. It's another thread. And then we have to imagine, what does all this mean? Obviously, none of this is by chance. And, of course, you have Lee Harvey Oswald in the middle of it, the supposed culprit, the man killing Kennedy. Who knows?
Well, we can actually piece much more together. One of the things I think that has surprised me is that the JFK revelations and Family of Secrets, and I am doing a fair amount of radio shows, one the more unusual, forthright ones such as yours, the large sort of conventional mainstream media outlets have not paid attention openly to the book except to write some reviews that were a bit sarcastic and what have you. But nobody can challenge these facts. And so in Family of Secrets, I do something I don't believe anybody's done before, which is I actually study the Texas School Book Depository. What was that? How and why did Lee Harvey Oswald get a job in that building? And what I discover is that, for example, the man who owned the building was a friend of George DeMorenschild. And,
amazing.
You know, you just put all
absolutely
these,
amazing.
Yeah. You know, you put these pieces together, Steve, and you say, these are all facts. Now, if you want to say none of these things mean anything, or you want to say that the fact that the people in the pilot car that was controlling the pace of Kennedy's motorcade, that these people, that there were some military intelligence figures who got themselves into the car, who were not supposed to be in the car, that those military intelligence figures were connected to a man very deeply involved with intelligence in the oil industry, who himself was a friend of George H.W. Bush. If these things are all coincidences, then they're all coincidences. If these hundreds and hundreds of things that I describe, the fact that I described that the Texas School Book Depository was not a building, it was a company. And this is not, again, I don't see that in any books. They just treat it as a fact that there was a building called that and Oswald worked there. Well, no. There very clearly was an effort to get him into the building in the weeks preceding the assassination. The building had been empty. And a company called the Texas School Book Depository, run by a right-wing militaristic fellow, very involved very active politically, that he already had a location for his company, and he didn't need to be in that building. But he moved part of his operation into that building. He hired Lee Harvey Oswald, and away you go.
Oh, again, amazing what people don't know, and so much in your book, Russ, I had no knowledge of, that you could go through just one set of facts after another, and the most important things, or the things that get discussed on this program all the time, Russ, not so much the deep stuff that you have to dig out by investigative journalists like you, but real information that never gets discussed in the mainstream. And that's what this program features all the time on all sorts of topics. We haven't gotten into Watergate yet. We certainly want to do that. And I don't think we're going to have enough time today. So that could be a good point to pick it up tomorrow. But let's take a break and we have one final segment. Maybe we can wrap up some thoughts in this hour and begin tomorrow on Watergate, which is a big, big story. We'll be right back.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Russ Baker. Part one, discussing his colossal book, Family of Secrets. Russ, let's wrap up how far we've come so far today. And leave the Watergate story for tomorrow, which, again, is a big one, and the connection between Nixon and Herbert Walker Bush. And, oh, dear, so much. I'll entice listeners to come back by saying the story is not what you think it is. It is a lot different with a lot of strands, but we'll get into that tomorrow. We just don't have enough time to do it today. But wrap up whatever else you want to mention today in the few minutes we have left, Russ.
Sure. I think the takeaway from all of this is that we do not understand our history. We don't understand who we put in the White House. We don't know these people. I don't care which one it is. We know very, very little about them. And you can read very good sort of conventional histories and you can learn more. But even those things I don't think really do justice to it, because all of us have layers of complexity and secrets, private thoughts, pressures that we don't put out there. And it's the job of historians and journalists to try to dig deeper and get beyond the platitudes to understand how things really come about, how people come to power, who's behind their decisions, what's behind their decisions. That's the function really, especially in a democracy, that's what Family of Secrets tries to do. These stories about George Herbert Walker Bush and his companies as covers for intelligence activity is very peculiar circumstances connected to the Kennedy assassination, that this untold real story of Watergate, which, as you say, we'll get into, I guess, tomorrow. All of these things are very, very important. And I think that really what Family of Secrets is about is that larger issue, that we don't understand our history, that a lot of the real factors are buried, and that we have to try to see these people not as isolated figures, not focusing on their foibles and their personalities and the controversies that the particularly the electronic media specializes in, because they, you know, those outlets can't in a minute or 30 seconds or whatever, they cannot get into any of these complexities, and we have to dig deeper. We have to sort of support efforts to get into the complexity, and that's why Family of Secrets, as you point out, it's almost 600 pages. It's not a quick read. There are 1,000 footnotes in there, we want to do this kind of work. That's also, by the way, why I started the nonprofit whowhatwhy.com. Whowhatwhy.com. The site is really just in its infancy now. We're looking to the public. We hope to support us with donations. And if people go to the site and they click and they say, you know what, I would give $20 a month, even in a bad economy, to have this kind of work done on a regular basis. We want to do the sort of work that's in Family of Secrets. Do it on a monthly, weekly, even daily basis on this site with public support, and look a little further. What's the real story on the bailouts, the GM bankruptcy? What's going on in the Middle East today? What's the real story on all of these things? That's my objective, and that's what I enjoy doing.
Well, Russ, we talk about those things on this program all the time, and regular listeners, well, they know the difference between this program and what they get through the major media, mostly television. And anybody new to this kind of a program would think that it's like news and information coming from another planet. It's so different. It's so opposite of the kind of things that are either distorted, suppressed, whatever. Often the most important things we need to know are the things never reported.
Well, that's right. You know, and there's a...
Russ, I better interrupt because that music means they're going to break away, and I don't want to leave without thanking you for coming on today, but absolutely, you will be back tomorrow, right?
I will indeed.